Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the night before Christmas program. Well, not really program. We're going to do our night before Christmas program tomorrow night, but tomorrow night will not really be the night before Christmas. It'll be the night before the night before. Never mind. It is the 22nd and of December. How are you doing with your Christmas madness? Huh? I've always kind of liked this time of year, but I think it's because I always tended to insulate myself from an awful lot of the commercial aspects of it. When I was a kid growing up, it was because there wasn't a whole lot of commercial aspects of it available to us. But I still find it a very intriguing time of year. Once you get away from, or at least this is true with me, once you get away from the hubbub, the traffic, the malls, we really don't shop in malls at Christmas. What we do is, over the course of a year, when we go to art fairs and stuff, you know, we try to pick up things thinking ahead to Christmas. As far as Santa's gifts to Molly, there's a place here, what is it, School Box? It's called the School Box. It's a toy store, but it's also for teachers use it a lot. There's some really intriguing games and toys, plain old toys in there for kids. I went into Toys R Us the other day because my grandson wants a guitar stand. He's turning out to be quite the guitar player and songwriter. At how old is he? 9. It's pretty spooky. But I mean, spooky in a good way. But I went to Toys R Us to get him a guitar stand and got the last one. But just wandering through the aisles, looking at the stuff that's for sale and looking at the people with the carts, the shopping carts loaded up with stuff. And I don't know. It was just kind of strange. I realized that when you go into Toys R Us, the people are in there shopping for children. I mean, it's not like they're shopping for each other. They're shopping for children. I want to get to that a little bit later on tonight. But anyway, tomorrow night is our Christmas Eve program, and I hope you're going to be here. We have elements of the Christmas Eve program that we've had for a number of years. O Holy Nightmare is sung. What else do we have? Night Before Christmas, Molly will climb up on my lap for the, this is the fourth time, Kathy? Fourth time. My son Chris, who's now 31, used to do this back in the early days of my doing radio. So we'll have that. We'll have Night Before Christmas. We'll have O Holy Nightmare. We have a very special episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander, that I've listened to it 3 times in the past 2 days, and I'll tell you, this is a good one. It will probably offend some people, but it's a good one. What else do we do, Kathy? Normally I read from the book of Luke. I might do that again, just because I like legends. I like the mysticism, and also, oh, that's right. We have a real nice piece on the winter solstice written by Bridget Wolf, who has the website along with her husband, fairywoodland.com. If you haven't been there, I haven't mentioned that lately, fairywoodland.com. We have a couple of pieces of her husband, John's art. And if you have not been to fairywoodland.com, man, you need to go there just if for no other reason to look at some of the stuff there. So we have that, a solstice piece, Christmas according to Luke, the Nativity according to Luke, Night Before Christmas with Molly, a Radio Gumshoe episode, Nightmare Before Christmas. That should be enough. That should be plenty. And then I believe that program, Wednesday's program, will be rebroadcast Thursday night, which is the real Christmas Eve, and then again Friday night, which is Christmas night. So if you miss it tomorrow night, you've got two more chances. Yet, like, yeah, Christmas Eve, you're going to be listening to the Malloy Show. Right. But anyway, that's kind of the schedule. And tomorrow night also will be our last night on the air live until January 4th, I believe. We have some rebroadcasts that will filter in there, courtesy of our friends in the station in Dallas, Texas. Brad Friedman, who normally is connected with our friends at the station in Los Angeles, will be filling in for us. I think he'll be doing that from Dallas, maybe from L.A. So if you tune in some night to this program while we're gone and you have dead air, you'll know that the equipment didn't turn on right. Or if you hear something that shouldn't be there, it's because the equipment didn't turn on right, and all the station, I'm freaking all the stations out down the line right now, and Sirius and XM, they're listening to this going, what? And plus our friends up at, Westwood One Satellite Company, they're going, what? So just in case, it doesn't mean we have been eaten by the flying monkey right, or that we're disappeared. It just means at that point we'll probably be unemployed, because radio stations don't like dead air. Glenn Beck has been added again. Another example of his work, this one from Honolulu. A woman accused of threatening to kill Michelle Obama has been arrested in Honolulu. You know, the Obama family plans to travel there after, after this health insurance thing is signed or passed or something. The Secret Service says a woman named Christy Lee Rocia, they had her picture at AOL, called the Boston office of the Secret Service last month and told a receptionist, I will kill Michelle Obama. I will kill Marines. She was taken into custody after threatening to kill Michelle Obama. So Glenn Beck's work continues on. He is like Jim Jones. He appeals to the madness that exists in probably most of us. That, you know, the only thing that keeps us civilized is to keep that insanity tamped down as best we can, however we do it. But sometimes if you have someone like Glenn Beck, like Jim Jones, like people who get others to commit these crazy acts, it's hard to keep that insanity tamped down. So another Glenn Beck listener, arrested in Hawaii. She was arrested on Saturday after she told Secret Service agents who were interviewing her that she knew where President Barack Obama and his wife would be staying during their visit to the islands, and that she was in fact planning on killing Michelle. So this is the kind of madness that is loosed when you have psychopaths on radio and television encouraging it, promoting it, pushing it to the surface, no matter how much restraint people try, who are sick and maybe know they're sick, or at least know within their sickness that there's certain things they can't do, like threaten the life of the president or the first lady or the children or what have you. But when you have a guru of insanity like Glenn Beck tampering with people's minds via the radio, you know, those electric signals that come out and get into their heads, it's difficult for some people to keep that stuff under control. So Glenn Beck has another feather in his cap, another person arrested, charged with planning to kill the First Lady. These are weird times, Truth Seeker. I can't think of times that have been too much weirder. So, anyway, as we get into tonight's program, stick around. We will have some fun things for you tonight. If you like the macabre, I'm Mike Malloy.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. Gordon in Oklahoma City sent me an email with a link to it, and I don't know if the sound... we'll have the sound a little bit later in the program tonight, but there was a plea from Senator Tom Coburn the other night, and he was calling for those imprecatory prayers, those ones where the Christian crazy people pray to God to hurt someone or to kill someone or otherwise stop someone from doing something. I've had those leveled against me by the Christian psychopaths here in the Atlanta area years and years and years ago. And it's really freaky. But Tom Coburn had called for divine intervention to cause a member of the U.S. Senate to miss a vote on the health care bill the other night. That's what he said. He wanted the Christian crazies. I don't know. I don't know when this is going to stop, but what he said was, quote, what the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight. That's what they ought to pray. Now, there's no doubt what he's talking about there. I think what they were praying for is for the senator from West Virginia, you know, the oldest guy in the Senate, Robert Byrd, to either die or faint or something. These people are really, really sick, and they, like I mentioned before, more and more American voters are switching out of the undecided or independent or conservative Democrat column into the Republican / conservative. I don't know what's going on. I guess it's just gut level fear. When people get scared, they usually align themselves with murderers and thugs that they think will protect them. But the only problem is the one senator who missed the vote was a fellow cult member, the vile James Inhofe from Oklahoma, the same as Tom Coburn. Ah, unintended consequences, right? And then Think Progress posted a video where one of these crying teabag lunatics called C-SPAN, and we're going to have the sound for you in a few moments, but this caller wanted to know, the guy that was on C-SPAN on the program, what is it, that one in the morning, Washington Journal, they had Barrasso, this crazy, freakish, is he a senator? I think he is. I'm not that familiar with Barrasso. But they had him on, and a guy calls in from down here in South Georgia. You'll hear it when we play it for you. And wanted to know if the prayer had backfired, because all the Democrats showed up. None of them died. And yet Inhofe was missing for the vote. Not the one the other night, Sunday night's vote, but I think Monday night's vote. They had another vote yesterday. And Inhofe wasn't there. So this poor, misguided psychopath from South Georgia who believes this stuff, that you can pray someone into hell, or you can issue up these imprecatory prayers to make somebody be wounded or dead, and that, you know, God will listen to your prayer and say, you know, I think Tom Coburn's right. Let me see, who can I kill over there on the Republican side or the Democratic side of the United States Senate on that little dot of snot called Earth? Let me see. I know, I'll pick that one. It is bizarre beyond belief. But I want you to hear this. Gordon, Oklahoma, sent it to me. And as Gordon writes, the teabag cult are convinced that Jehovah, Yahweh, I am, L, or capital G dash lowercase d, will do a hit job anytime they contact him on their speed dial. he has their numbers all right, and they're all on call block. So we're gonna pull up that sound for you because I want you to hear this. It's just bizarre. What else we got? Oh yeah, Sarah Palin pops up out of the slime again. She said that the forthcoming merged health care bill, the House and the Senate, will probably have the death panels in again. I want to laugh. I want to fist bump my friends and say, look at the madness. Aren't you glad we're not part of the madness? But you know what? These are people running the country. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, here's the setup. It was on, what's that program again, Kathy? Washington Journal? Washington Journal? Yeah, on C-SPAN in the morning. Let me set it up for you again. Just before the Senate vote on the first of the three procedural motions that were necessary to move the current health care insurance reform bill toward final passage, Tom Coburn, who I believe is a doctor and a Christian psychopath from Oklahoma, he urged Americans to pray that a member of the majority caucus would not show up to vote, and that would leave the Democrats one vote shy of breaking the threatened Republican filibuster. Now, imprecatory prayer is designed for one thing. It's designed to call upon their crazed God to hurt someone, to kill someone, to interfere, to, you know, it's really vicious, it's satanic stuff. It is Christianity inverted. It is goat's heads and, blood. I mean, it's horrible stuff. Coburn said the following, quote, "What the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight. That's what they ought to pray." Now, that was for, I think that was for Sunday night. As it turned out, all 100 senators voted on the measure, which passed on a party line vote 60-40. Today, Tuesday morning, today, the Senate health care bill jumped the second procedural hurdle, again with 60 senators in the Democratic caucus voting to pass the measure. But only 39 Republicans voted against it. James Inhofe, the crazy religious psychopath from Oklahoma, another one, Tom Coburn's buddy, was the Republican who missed the vote. So on C-SPAN this morning, a caller wondered if perhaps Coburn's prayer request had backfired against his own party. Now, I want you to listen to this. The guy talking is Senator John Barrasso, a Republican religious psychopath from Wyoming. Starts out with the caller.
Yeah, doctor, our small tea bag group here at Waycross, we got our vigil together and took Dr. Colbert's instructions and prayed real hard that Senator Burr would either die or couldn't show up at the vote the other night. How hard did you pray? Because I see one of our members is missing this morning. Did it backfire on us? One of our members died. How hard did you pray, Senator? Did you pray hard enough?
Senator Barrasso, he was referring to Senator Inhofe, who was not part of the round of voting this morning.
The votes today, they needed 60 votes in favor of the bill. Senator Inhofe is opposed to the bill, and whether he was there or not, it didn't make any difference. There was no way that Jim Inhofe was going to vote for the bill, a senator from Oklahoma. So that's why he wasn't there this morning.
Do you know where he was, Senator, why he wasn't able to make the vote this morning?
No, I don't know.
Now, I need to tell you something about Waycross, Georgia. Waycross, Georgia is right on the edge of the Dismal Swamp. The what is it down there, Kathy? Okefenokee? What's the one in Florida? That's the Everglades. Yeah, the Okefenokee Swamp down in South Georgia. And it's a huge area of South Georgia that just never recovered from the last glacial age when, cuts and gouges were dug into the earth as these retreating glaciers dragged boulders back. And the swamp, it's where the Pogo crew lived. If you remember the Pogo cartoon strip, they all lived down in the Okefenokee Swamp. But the people who live in Waycross, Georgia, for the most part, are totally infected and affected by that damn swamp. I've had a couple of people that I knew that moved up here from there, moved from Waycross, moved up to Atlanta. I've known them, haven't met them yet. I think the Haints got them and ripped their heads off. But I knew them years ago. And some of the stories they told me about Waycross went beyond scary. I mean, you hear weird stories about the Deep South. You hear weird stories about small town Deep South. But when you hear weird stories about small town Deep South on the edge of a swamp, talk about the gators got you, granny. I mean, for real. And so the fact that this poor bastard called from Waycross, you know, he did what he was instructed to do. He said it. We all got together and prayed real hard that Senator Byrd would either die or couldn't show up. Can you believe that? Now, you notice how Senator John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming, you notice how he avoided answering the question. This poor bastard from Waycross said, "How hard did you pray? Because I see one of our members was missing this morning. Did it backfire on us? Did one of our members die? Did you pray, Senator?" Yeah. My God. Have you got it ready? Have you got it ready right there again? I want you to hear the caller again. This is unbelievable, but trust me. Yeah, but
okay, look, just cue up the Christmas tree.
Trust me, what you're about to hear is real, if we can find it here. Have we got it?
Our group here at Waycross, we got our vigil together at Dr. Colbert's instructions and prayed real hard that Senator Burr would either die or couldn't show up at the vote the other night. How hard did you pray? Because I see one of our members is missing this morning. Did it backfire on us and one of our members died? How hard did you pray, Senator? Did you pray hard enough?
Can you see? I mean, this is astonishing. These are United States senators. Coburn tells these poor, miserable, misguided, blinded bastards to pray for somebody's death. Because, you know, all Coburn said was, what the American people ought to pray is that somebody can't make the vote tonight. That's what they ought to pray. That's code. Everybody who is a crazy Christian, a fundamentalist Christian, they understand what that means. That's code for imprecatory prayer. That's code. Coburn couldn't say, "I want you all to get out there and pray that Senator Byrd will die." But that's exactly what the message is. And this poor bastard down in Waycross, can you imagine? He's walking around Waycross, Georgia, And trust me, it's not a very pleasant sight down there. He's walking around Waycross, Georgia, with apparently some kind of burden on him now. See? You heard him start crying. He spent the night with his teabag group praying for a senator's death. Praying for a senator's death. Senator didn't die, but James Inhofe is missing. Uh-oh. Do you think we prayed the wrong thing, or did it backfire? Man. And there are people who are proud Republicans. Yeah. Anyway, thanks to Gordon, Oklahoma City, who turned me on to this whole thing. Now, that's not bad enough. Sarah Palin today said that the forthcoming merged health care bill could contain those death panels that she talked about over the summer. According to Jordan Fabian writing at The Hill, Palin took to Twitter saying that the merged bill could be unrecognizable from what the House passed and what the Senate passed. She said, merged bill may be unrecognizable from what assumed was a done deal. Regarding death panels back in, what's punishment for not purchasing mandated health care? So now, if you don't buy it, they may kill you. Jesus Christ! Oh! You remember in her first death panel insanity, Palin wrote in a Facebook note. Boy, she just wrote up her Facebook and Twitter. Yeah. She wrote that seniors, quote, have to stand in front of Obama's death panel so his bureaucrats can decide based on a subjective judgment on their level of productivity in society and, you know, whether or not they should be put to sleep or something. Of course, the lie of the year is that death panel nonsense. I don't care what you think about the health care plan. I think it sucks. But it's one thing to disagree politically with people who have put together this health insurance reform thing. It's something else again to order your completely, I guess their brains are half eaten with religious cancer, to order those people to pray for somebody's death so that they can't vote? This is Christianity.
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, we also have a report card from Kay Petrini coming up after the next break. I like this. A priest in Northern England, the Reverend Tim Jones, has caused somewhat of an uproar. He told his congregation that it is sometimes acceptable for desperate people to shoplift, to steal, as long as they do it at large national chain stores rather than small family businesses. Boy, I like this guy. He's a priest in Northern England, so the commandment says, thou shalt not steal, isn't exactly written in stone, I guess. His sermon from, I think it was last Sunday, drew rebukes today from fellow clergy, from shop owners, and from the police. His pulpit is at the Church of St. Lawrence in York, about a couple hundred miles north of London. And the preacher said in his sermon Sunday that shoplifting can be justified if a person in real need is not greedy and doesn't take more than he or she really needs, you know, to get by. Oh, Lord. The remarks drew a summons from Archdeacon Richard Seed, who said on his website that the church rejects the view that shoplifting can be acceptable. He said, quote, the Church of England does not advise anyone to shoplift or break the law in any way, end quote. Seed's statement went on to say, quote, Father Tim Jones is raising important issues about the difficulties people face when benefits are not forthcoming, but shoplifting is not the way to overcome these difficulties. There are many organizations and charities working with people in need, and the Citizens Advice Bureau is a good first place to call, end quote. Citizens Advice Bureau. I don't know what that is. It must be strictly a Brit thing. And a spokeswoman for Archdeacon Seed, I like that name, said the Archdeacon wants to meet with Pastor Jones, or Reverend Jones, I should say, to discuss the, quote, appropriateness, unquote, of his sermon. Now, meantime, Reverend Tim Jones told the Associated Press that he stands by his comments. He said he regretted only that the media is focusing on his view on shoplifting rather than the underlying problem he wanted to address. Well, isn't that just like the typical media, though, Tim? I mean, come on, Reverend Tim. Huh? Then he said this, quote, Reverend Tim did. He said, the point I'm making is that when we shut down every socially acceptable avenue for people in need, then the only avenue left is the socially unacceptable one. And he added that people are often released from prison without any means of support, which leads them back into crime. Reverend Tim said, quote, what I'm against is the way society has become ever more comfortable with the people at the very bottom and blinded to their needs, end quote. He said shoplifting could help people who are legally entitled to government welfare benefits but have the benefits delayed for bureaucratic reasons. Now, the North Yorkshire Police also condemned Reverend Jones' approach as counterproductive because people already in marginal conditions would find themselves in trouble with the law if they resorted to shoplifting. Oh, my God. Well, I think Reverend Tim is right on. Right on target, I really do. You know, someone who's desperately in need. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, what would you do, Truth Seeker? Let's do a little thought puzzle here. Supposing, you know, your child was starving and they're desperately hungry at home, and you had exhausted everything, every means of trying to get some kind of help. You were not at home. You were living in your car. Your spouse left you. You're there with your two children who are desperately hungry. And you walk into one of these big box stores and you see all this garbage packaged to look like real food. But what are you going to do? I mean, and you're broke. Are you going to take something? I would get a shopping cart and load it up and just walk out the door. And if they stop me, I would say, do you want me to put an imprecatory prayer on your ass? And get in the car and feed my kids. Oh. These are strange times when you have United States senators asking people for imprecatory prayer to pray that a member of the Senate, a Democratic member of the Senate, will somehow be prevented from showing up for a vote on health care reform. What kind of a sick deity do these psychopaths believe in? Don't answer. I know what kind of a sick deity they believe in. Man, do they ever stop to think that they could be the object of imprecatory prayer? That maybe, you know, that's a pretty good idea. I wonder how many of us it would take to pray Tom Coburn into hell. Nah, just kidding. Just kidding. If we want to get him into hell, we just put some juju on him and, you know, do a little dance with the inverted goat's head, and we're there. All right, this is madness. We have a break. We'll be back after the break, and we're going to have a report card from Kay Petrini. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Do you want me to make it tonight, this program? How crazy do you want me to? I've got a story here that was sent to me that, I don't know, man. I just don't know. Chris Floyd wrote this today. You got to hear this. Chris writes, it sounds like something Mikhail Bulgakov might have written. Remember, I've talked about him on this program, The Master and Margarita. If you haven't read that, go read it. Chris Floyd, this sounds like something Mikhail Bulgakov might have written, deep in the sinister phantasmagoria of the Stalinist night. This is from the Israeli service ynetnews.com. Quote, one of the large mental health hospitals in Israel was recently surprised to receive a young, good-looking patient in a psychotic state who was accompanied by a personal security guard. That's according to Yedioth Aharonoth newspaper, reported on Sunday. The doctors, who asked why the woman was accompanied by a guard, were shocked to learn that she was a Mossad agent and that the security guard was not assigned to her in order to assure her safety or protect her life. The Mossad agent was assigned to her to ensure that she not revealed any state secrets in her shaky mental state. The Mossad's guard's orders were clear. Quote, it is forbidden that the organization's secrets be passed on to those unauthorized to hear them, end quote. The doctors, who are unaccustomed to the presence of a third party during their treatment sessions, were left with no choice but to acquiesce to their demands. In addition, the staff had to receive a security clearance before being allowed to work on her exceptional case. To their complete amazement, another young woman, also accompanied by a secret agent, charged with ensuring that she, too, not leak any state secrets, arrived at the institution just a short time later. The doctors learned that she, too, is a Mossad agent. End quote. YNetNews.com via Yadayath Aranath newspaper. Chris writes, it seems evident that the young women were driven mad by acts they have witnessed or carried out. These acts were literally unspeakable crimes of the state, hence the presence of the state's goons to prevent the slightest whisper of the dark deeds from escaping. The story's efficacy as both paradigm and prophecy for our modern world could hardly be bettered. Woo! Like I said, how weird do you want to make it? The night before Christmas. How weird do you want to make it tonight? I got one more, but I don't think you can handle this one. This is another story from Israel, but I just don't think you can. I think I'll pass on this one. This one is just too out there. And again, you know, please keep in mind that to me, since I'm not Jewish, Israel is just another nation state. It's, I don't know, pick one. The Czech Republic, Mexico, Iceland, Israel, Canada, the United States. You know, it's just another country to me. When these stories come up, I just don't get involved in the crazy religious stuff. I said that years ago when I used to talk about Israel's treatment of the Palestinians and was immediately labeled an anti-Semite. I said, you people don't understand. As long as there is a country, a nation state called Israel or Saudi Arabia or Iran or whatever it is, I certainly claim for myself the right to criticize their internal or external policy, just like I would China, the United States. I mean, my God, Israel is not off limits to me. It never has been and it never will be. Same for the United States. It's not off limits either. If you listen to this program, you know that to be the damn truth. But this other one from Israel, I can't do it. It's just too spooky. All right, what else we got here? Do you remember back in the summer of 2005, Cindy Sheehan, who lost her son Casey in Iraq, she set up a camp on the road outside Bush's vacation home in Crawford, Texas. Remember that? And all she had, she just wanted somebody to answer her question. She wanted to know what was the, as Bush put it, noble cause for which her son had died. That's all. That's all she wanted to know. And over the course of the next few months, thousands of people joined her in Crawford. Remember, Camp Casey became a national story that temporarily breathed life into the anti-war movement. And then you had the right-wing crazy people from talk radio who went down and set up counter camps to celebrate Cindy Sheehan's the death of her child. You know, the usual crazies. 4 years ago, they were just as sick and as destructive as they are now. There was some female talk show host who went down there, and I don't know, man. You know, there's a woman trying to make a statement, trying to ask a question. Will somebody please tell me why my son was sent to Iraq where he died? And, of course, she was treated as though she were a piece of garbage by the side of the road. During that time, we had Cindy Sheehan on this program many, many, many times. And I could never understand the contempt that these filthy, disgusting Republicans showered on a mother whose son had died. Whereas in this phony war in Iraq, this war based on lies, while they, the Republicans, would no more put on a uniform or go fight one of Bush's wars than cut their own throats. This is another reason why Republicans, to me, are not even close to the same species that I am. I know that. Well, having blabbed all that, come March, Cindy Sheehan and other activists from a group calling itself Peace of the Action, only peace is spelled P-E-A-C-E, will be setting up a camp on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. And according to Scott Galindis, writing at Truthout, when asked how long the encampment will last, Cindy Sheehan responded, quote, as long as it takes, that'll be up to the government. We are prepared to stay until our demands are met, unquote. The demands, she went on to say, are pretty simple. They are troops out of the Middle East, which includes drones, permanent bases, contractors, and torture detention facilities. That's all. Sheehan said that she has known for years that the peace movement needs to take bolder action and that the group's goal will be to hold multiple civil resistance actions daily throughout the nation's capital. Cindy Sheehan said that participants would be asked to adhere to agreed upon nonviolence guidelines while standing up and resisting against what she called the robber class. Standing for peace. I know somebody in Seattle that does that. She said they will also be reaching out to the homeless in D.C. by providing them food and clothing. She said, while there are a lot of long-time homeless people with mental illnesses currently in D.C., they're increasing. And she said they're also going to try to do a little work to help them, too. Oh, man. Peace of the Action. They have a website. Check it out. P-E-A-C-E of the Action. Check it out. We'll be right back. And your child, too. He'll sing my day of glory. I've seen my day.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed.
The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn or 0% financing for qualified buyers, plus bonus cash. Length of contract limited. Take delivery by January 4th.
Help to make the season bright.
It's 22 past the hour. This Cindy Sheehan thing, again, it's a piece of the action. I don't have the exact web address, but you can find it if you do a Google. Peace is spelled P-E-A-C-E, piece of the action. The website says the following. We've marched, written, called, and faxed, but the wars continue. It's time for new creative strategies and bolder action. Peace of the action will bring forward an historic escalation of peace activism like we've not seen in the United States in a very long time. We cannot allow business as usual to go on in the capital of the American empire. On a daily basis, Peace of the Action will perform courageous deeds of civil resistance until our demands are met. We will show our righteous outrage at U.S. militarism by showing our elected officials that peace means business, by clogging up government business. We want an end to empire so we can build a new economy that is not drained by the costs of empire and war. The empire does not create jobs abroad while it has the effect of destroying jobs here on the domestic front. The empire builds the profits of transnational businesses while Americans go further into debt and fights wars for oil and resources. It's time to stop using militarism as the primary tool of foreign policy it's time to start adhering to the U.S. Constitution and international law. That's at the website. Now, what I'll be curious to see is what kind of reaction this gets from Christian churches. I'm not all that concerned about Muslim and Jewish organizations at this point regarding this action, but I'll be curious to see how the Christians, how the Christian churches, which is the dominant force, religious force in this country, how they react. The group has a D.C.-based organizer, a guy named Robbie Daisu, D-I-E-S-U. And for the last two springs, he organized something called Our Spring Break, which brought students from across the country to Washington to protest war. And what they did, they spent the week sleeping on church floors and participating in demonstrations, such as Stop Lost Congress, in which participants tried to prevent legislators from leaving Capitol Hill in order to protest Stop Loss in the military, and something called March of the Dead. Daisu told Truth Out that many organizations are getting involved in Peace of the Action, but they're not seeking endorsements. He said, quote, "We want to be part of the action and help plan it, not just endorse it," end quote. It will begin, they'll begin building the camp on March 13th on the lawn of the Washington Monument, and actions will begin on March 22nd. So we'll continue to report on this. I'll be curious to see how many mainstream Christian congregations, individuals and denominations, who claim at this time of year to be adherents to a faith originated by the so-called Prince of Peace. That's how they have identified him for 2,000 years, that he was the Prince of Peace. Some Christians have hedged that there is something called a justified war, or I forget what the exact term was or is. But surely the two wars that Bush got us into and Obama is perpetrating are not just wars at all. They can't be, just by definition, especially not Iraq. So for the people who claim a Messiah, the Jews and the Muslims don't, an arrived Messiah, a murdered and risen again Messiah. For those people, that would be the Christians. How are you going to react to Cindy Sheehan's peace camp? Her demand that war stop, that we get out of the Middle East, which includes everything from our presence starting at the edge of the Mediterranean in Israel all the way to the mountains in Pakistan. You know, that we just get out, just leave. It's not our business. And we certainly should not be killing people in the name of empire. That's so 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th century, isn't it? Don't you think? Isn't it time? So I'll be, and I'm sure you will be too, watching and maybe participating in this and seeing how Christianity in the United States responds to Cindy Sheehan's peace camp. Love and joy come to you, and to you your whole self too, and God bless you and grant you a happy new year, and God grant you a happy new year. Call up the butler of this house, put on his golden ring, let him bring us out a glass of beer, and better we shall sing. Love and joy come to you, and to you your whole self too, and God bless you and grant you a happy new year, and God grant you a happy new year.
They say Osama's in the mountains, deep in a cave in Pakistan, but there's a sea of blood in oil in the sand.
25 before the hour. All right, let's cue the music, Maestro.
Teach your children well, 'cause their father's hell did slowly go by.
It's time once again for a report card from our educational affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini, who is a school teacher in San Francisco. Kay writes, "Hey, Mike. It finally happened. I hate to say I told them so, but I did. You see, at the beginning of the fall semester, when the healthcare debate was heating up, I gave my government students an assignment that I hoped would make the issue relevant to them. They were to interview a parent or guardian about the health coverage they currently have and to find out how this might change when they, the students, go off to college next year. Most of the students reported back that their parents' policies will continue to cover them until the age of 23, as long as they are full-time students. And since almost all of them will be attending college, they figured, no problem. That's when I took the liberty of raising a few important points. First, being a full-time student means carrying 15 units, the equivalent of 5 3-unit classes. Two, if a student needs to work part-time to cover some of the expenses, 15 units is very difficult to maintain. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Three, California budget cuts have already limited the availability of required classes, and it is only going to get worse. Most of these students will attend schools in either the University of California or California State University systems. As the kids would say, whatever. Most of them figured that since I went to college back in the day, this information was irrelevant to them. That all changed this past week when one student raised her hand in class and shared the following, and I'm paraphrasing, quote, "My sister can't be covered under my parents' health plan anymore. She tried to get all of her classes, but she only got 3 of them, so she's not a full-time student. She can't get the classes she needs, and she won't be able to graduate on time either. One of her friends had to sign up for 4 PE classes, so she would still be a full-time student. Those were the only classes she could get. Plus, they raised the fees a lot this year and are going to raise them even more next year. They're going to charge more money for fewer classes. What the hell?" End quote. And there you have it. The budget means in this state, the budget mess in this state is so bad that hundreds of required classes have been cut. Not only is this causing a 4-year degree to go the way of the dinosaur, but thousands of students are finding that they no longer have health insurance because they are no longer full-time students. The state university health centers used to be a great alternative for students without insurance, but not anymore, because they have been cut into oblivion as well. One argument I've heard is that this isn't such a big deal. After all, these are young people who hardly ever get sick anyway. True, young people are generally healthier than their older counterparts, but sometimes they do get sick, and sometimes it's serious. My 28-year-old friend was diagnosed with aggressive breast cancer earlier this year and underwent a radical double mastectomy to better her odds of survival. What about young people like her? Where does it end? Oh, that's right. With a, quote, healthcare, end quote, bill that is funded by increasing the tax on union health plans instead of increasing taxes on the bazillionaires who have spent the last 30 years raping and pillaging the middle class. I haven't had the stomach to read all the details, but I did read that one provision and effing flipped out. As my dad said on the day he discovered that he had fallen into the Medicare donut hole and could not pay $830 for a 30-day supply of medication, quote, "What kind of country do we live in?" end quote. By now, I think we all know the answer to that question. K.
Them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by.
Wow. Yeah, that's one of the one of the side effects I hadn't even considered. in California, I guess it's probably true in a lot of other states too. California used to be the jewel of the public education system on the university level in this country, remember? It wasn't that long ago, remember? I can remember back in the day wanting to go to Pasadena Playhouse to go to school when I graduated from high school, and for a number of reasons never made it. But in the process of checking all that out, I couldn't help but notice that tuition, if you were an in-state resident, was practically free to get a degree in the California higher education system. Why do we charge for education in this country anyway? Why does it cost someone $20,000 to $50,000 per year to go to college, university? Why? I mean, aren't there countries around the globe where an education is free based on the idea that an educated population is going to provide all sorts of benefits to the country or the state as a whole, right? Isn't that how Ireland went from being the so-called sick man of Europe into being, for a time being, what was referred to as a Celtic tiger? They made education extremely affordable, if not free. I don't remember exactly what the Irish did, but this is back in the 80s, and it paid off. Oh, my God, did it pay off. Now, they, like every other country, are suffering mightily because of what the bankers and the real estate thugs and the financial services industry did to the entire world. Those sons of bitches should be lined up against a wall and shot. Don't you think? I mean, for all the grief and misery, and this is the second or third time they've done it in the past 25 years. I mean, they just keep stealing, causing people to die, causing people to go insane. And what do we do? Nothing. Nothing. But why in this country education is not completely subsidized by the people of this country? We subsidize trillions for death and destruction. How much do we subsidize for education? Seriously, huh? How much do we subsidize for education? Oh, my God. Don't even ask a question like that, Malloy. Don't even ask a question like that. You know, the actual, I was reading an article in Mother Jones, the January-February issue by David Korn, titled, "Thank You, Sir, May We Have Another." Very interesting. But as a sidebar to the article, he has a list of what $14 trillion, which is what the payout to the financial services industry really has been. You know, forget that $1 trillion or $780 billion or all that other garbage. You know, Prairie 2 has been telling us over and over and over again that the number is in the trillions, and it is. It's an incredibly unfathomable amount. As Korn writes, the price tag for the Wall Street bailout is often put at $700 billion, the size of the Troubled Assets Relief Program, TARP. But TARP's just the tip of the iceberg of money paid out or set aside by the Treasury Department and Federal Reserve. In her book titled It Takes a Pillage, Behind the Bailouts, Bonuses, and Backroom Deals from Washington Wall Street, Naomi Prinz uncovers the hush-hush programs and crunches the hidden numbers to calculate the shocking actual size of the bailout, $14.4 trillion. Now, what could you buy with that? Huh? Here's what you could buy. All this is inclusive. This is not an either or. This is inclusive. First of all, they cost $110 billion for 10 years of vaccines for kids in 117 countries. It costs $318 billion for 10 years of $10,000 bonuses for all U.S. public school teachers. Add another $347 billion for sending all 2009 U.S. high school grads to private college. $347 billion, that's all it would take. Jesus Christ. Add $493 billion, which will double the U.S. spending on HIV, AIDS, and cancer research for 20 years. Add $559 billion, 10 years of CO2 offsets for all Americans. There's more here. There's more. Add $757 billion, which would meet UN anti-poverty goals by 2015. Add $860 billion, which is 20 years of universal preschool in the United States. Every little kid, pre-kindergarten, would get preschool. Add $878 billion. That would be buying a house for every homeless American. Add $2 trillion for 10 years of helping developing countries deal with the effects of climate change. Add two more trillion, which would buy the world an iPhone 3GS, everybody on Earth. Huh? You still with me? There's three more. I'll share two more. I'll share them with you when we come back. Behind tinted windows, they just drive by. And all I know is that those that are going to be killed aren't those that preside on Capitol Hill. I told him, don't fill the front lines of their war.
Where is the outrage? Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. All right, two more things that $14 trillion could buy. We've got 10 years of vaccines for kids in 117 countries, 10 years of $10,000 bonuses for all U.S. public school teachers, money to send all U.S. high school graduates from 2009 to private college, doubling U.S. spending on cancer and HIV/AIDS research for 20 years, 10 years of CO2 offsets for all Americans, money to meet UN anti-poverty goals by 2015, 20 years of universal preschool in the United States, 20 years for every kid, buying a house for every homeless American, 10 years of helping developing countries deal with the effects of climate change, buying the world an iPhone 3GS, everybody in the world would get one, 10 years of private health insurance for uninsured Americans, and paying off one-third of U.S. home mortgages. The total, $14 trillion. Where did the $14 trillion go? It went to the very people who have destroyed the economy, destroyed our attitudes, you know, on and on. And since the theft is so big, so enormous, so incomprehensible, what is there to do in response? How do you respond to a crime this large? It's like, how did the world respond to the crime of Nazism? We had the Nuremberg trials. We hanged a few people. But, I mean, for the deaths of 50 million, or was it 60 million, as a result of what the Axis powers did? How do you respond to a crime so enormous that it's incomprehensible? We hanged a few in Japan, too, didn't we? But the theft of $14.4 trillion that went to the financial services industry and all of its filthy, sick forms, and what that money could do for not just people here in the United States, although that's an enormous set of circumstances that could be altered for people to the good, all to the good, but not just here, in other countries too. If the cost, according to these these breakdowns, if the cost of sending all U.S. high school grads in 2009 to private college, if the cost for that is $350 billion, compare that to the $700 billion that was allocated last week for weapons and death and destruction, the so-called U.S. defense industry, the Pentagon. Who are we defending against? Some people with Stinger missiles in the mountains of Pakistan? It's very difficult to maintain sanity when you discover this stuff, when you just read. I mean, not that we all don't know that everything is out of balance here, that everything is like in tilt mode. But when you actually see it written down, that to give every 2009 high school graduate in the United States an education at a private university, that the cost of that would be half of what goes into the pockets of the defense establishment, the military, it's not even defense, the offense, military establishment, the death industry, the war industry, the killing factories. If we only gave the Pentagon $347 billion and took the other $347 and did just that, provide full college educations to every high school graduate in the United States in 2009, I mean, what would be wrong with that? Can somebody put that into short sentences and tell me an email. What would be wrong with that? What would be wrong with cutting the defense or the war budget, the death budget in half? Just cut it in half. Instead of $700 billion, they only get $350 billion, which still is 10 times, 15 times our next competitor in weapon expenditure, in death, whatever you want to call it. So if we gave the Pentagon $350 billion and took the other $350 billion and paid for every high school graduate in 2009 to go to university, what's the downside of that? Somebody tell me, what's the downside of that? Is there something in the Bible against that? Is there something in this rigged free market economy of ours that's against that? What's the downside? Can anyone just send me a very simple email and tell me why that would be a bad idea of whacking half of the Pentagon budget and giving it to every single college graduate in this country or high school graduate in this country in 2009 so they can go on to university and get an education? What's wrong with that? See, if you think about that stuff too much, really, if you think about it too much, you just start to go crazy. I mean, not go crazy. You start to lose, I do. Wrong pronoun. If I think about that stuff too much, I start to lose more than just a sense of proportion. I start to lose equilibrium, balance, a sense of reality. I don't know, man. Pretty weird. Well, if you can think of a reason why it's a bad deal, send me an email. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen. Oh, we're going to open up the phone lines if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. Glad you could make it. Hope you're going to be here tomorrow night for our annual Christmas program, which will be rebroadcast Thursday night, Christmas Eve, and rebroadcast yet again Friday night, Christmas night. And we'll be gone next week. Brad Friedman will be doing most of the fill-in work, and I think a couple of nights of rebroadcast. So we'll be back January 4th. Justine in Maryland writes, Mike, just an observation about Naomi Prinz, the one I was quoting from the Mother Jones. Hey, Mike, just an observation. Not too long ago, I caught an interview of Naomi Prinz on C-SPAN. The interview ran at about 3 or 4 a.m. And the interviewer was independent Senator Bernie Sanders. Very interesting, and neither held back on their contempt for financial institutions. The interview probably aired while regular people, you know, non-night owls and those who don't work overnight, might have been watching. But I always find it interesting when more so-called controversial and fact-based programs air in the middle of the night, whether on PBS, C-SPAN, or otherwise. Wouldn't want to bump off the usual crap on TV, now would we? Justine in Maryland. Yeah, well, you know, we America would not stand if CBS didn't run Survival, the Final Four, or whatever the hell it is. it's just too much madness. I don't know. Makes me crazy. Doesn't it, you? Come on. You know it does. Joe is in Costa Mesa, California, listening on XM. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
Getting by. How's it going with you?
Well, obviously frustrated. I listen to what you guys are talking about on the radio, and we voice our frustrations, but for some reason, nothing ever seems to happen, no matter what we do.
That's true.
And I got a kick out of your point about you know, giving everyone that's in high school a college education, but the right wing would never go for something like that because of the fact that they rely on two things: the wealthy, intelligent, greedy ones at the top require that they have they fill out their ranks with ignorant ones.
Yeah,
and the more intelligent, the more educated they become, the less religious they are, the less the less bigoted they are,
mm-hmm.
And so that's why you get all the crazies that come out all the time for the Republicans.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and I do believe, as you obviously do, that that is a conscious effort to deny people education. Education that is fact-based, science-based, and so on and so forth, because you're right, absolutely. The more educated a population becomes, a number of things happen. They have fewer children, first of all.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, which cuts down on poverty immensely. Not to deny anybody having kids, but if you have two kids, or three if you're Catholic, okay, but 8 or 9 or 14, that is seems to be so required in, poor countries. But, the more education, the less you have of all those things that we think of as intractable problems, like, overpopulation, like, pollution, like, I mean, just on and on. It all has to do with education. And I agree with you. The right wing in this country, whether it is the political right or the Christian right, they thrive on other people's ignorance. This is what they feast on. This is what feeds them. This is what is their real communion.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the only way that the Democrats are actually going to make any headway is they have to stop fooling themselves to believe that just making the honest pitch is actually going to be good enough against the Republicans, when now you're starting to see that they'll pull all the stops out to the point where they'll lie. They won't even pretend. They will lie and do it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have any truth in advertising I wish that there would be someone that would start to push that politicians are in fact selling a product when they are basically offering up information on candidates. When we end up voting for them and we don't know the truth and we voted based on lies, then that's propaganda. And we're allowing propaganda. We're not allowing truth to be in the media. And so you basically can lie and get away with it. Whereas I could sell a product, and I would get nailed if I lied about that product.
Mm.
But why don't politicians get nailed for lying about their background or lying about, what's in a bill, what's,
Well, Joe, oh my God, you know, you're so right, but like me, you are so caught in this web of rationality, while everything swirling out here in what passes for the real world is so irrational. I hear you. Hey, Joe, I'm going to move on. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Take care, pal. Take care. Yeah, truth, and evidence. Remember the court case down in Florida, local Fox affiliate, Fox Rupert Murdoch affiliate in Florida was sued for telling lies on the air, reporting lies as fact. And the case went to, I think it went to a high court. It was a civil case. It went to a high court in Florida, maybe the state Supreme Court. But the final ruling was that the First Amendment protected the right of Fox News to lie. And when you read the First Amendment, what it says about a free press, and then look at this ruling that said, and this was several years ago, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, whatever. You look at this ruling that says a television news organization, in this case Fox, has no obligation whatsoever to tell the truth. A. B. cannot be sued or otherwise held accountable for knowingly telling lies. Now, once that ruling occurred, that opened it up for Fox News Channel. If you ever really want to have your stomach turned, just tune in to Fox in the morning. Every once in a while, while I'm feeling, particularly weird, I don't know, just want some kind of a jolt of mega weirdness, I will tune in to Fox News Channel in the morning and watch it for a couple of minutes and just, you know, just get right up to the edge of the abyss just from hearing what I'm hearing. And then it comes very clear to you, if you're doing this, why that ruling by a court in Florida was key to Fox News Channel and the independent or the affiliated Fox stations from to continue broadcasting.
I can't watch Fox News in the morning or in the afternoon or in the evening. So much Botox, it makes my forehead stiff just watching it.
It is like Botox.
I don't know what they did to Greta Van Susteren.
I know. They did something horrible to Greta. A matter of fact, Greta Van Susteren, Greta plays into our Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe episode tomorrow night. That's right. So does Molly. Don't miss it. Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe tomorrow night. Written and produced by Bob Alexander. Your phone calls when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
The second thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me.
Rigging up the lights.
And finding a Christmas tree. The third thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me.
Hangovers. Rigging up the lights.
And finding a Christmas tree.
Sending Christmas cards.
Hangovers.
Rigging up the lights.
And finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me. 5 months of bills.
Sending Christmas cards.
Hangovers. hangovers,
rigging up the lights,
and finding a Christmas tree. The sixth thing at Christmas that's such a...
As we have we...
The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn, or 0% financing for qualified buyers, plus bonus cash. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Past the hour, Lobo is in Chicago listening online. Hey, Lobo.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. Haven't heard from you in forever.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I tried a couple of times to call in the last few months. I heard you earlier talking about Cindy and a piece of the action.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you, it's hopefully it'll be something. She was here last summer, and she came up to Chicago and drove up to Madison, Wisconsin for the Progressive Magazine 100-year conference deal with me and a young lady named Kathy Smith. Kathy Smith's son is Thomas Young from Phil Donahue's movie, Body of War.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good. We're going to celebrate Christmas with him in Kansas City next month.
Wow, super.
Yeah, mother. His mother and his youngest brother are up there in Chicago with me now. And, yeah, things are going pretty good, you know.
Good.
From the rest of the world, we're trying to hang tough. I'm just hoping that we can do something. I just try to keep people safe and healthy. When I went to Camp Casey over and over again, or D.C. and other places, I'm not an idea man as far as how to get something going here. We got real trouble, and even with the VA, last summer I spent 4 days over at the Kansas City VA hospital, where they tried to neglect Thomas to death when he got sick again, and it's just a constant struggle. If it wasn't for his mother, they would have. And I don't know how these other vets do it without somebody like her constantly, you know, getting on the case.
Right, right.
So I don't know. I just glad to mention this whole deal, and I'm hoping. A couple of professors I know here, they mentored Obama when he first got started in politics. I'm a Chicagoan, born and raised. Obama's not really a Chicagoan.
Right.
I didn't really have the audacity to hope in the first place, but some of these guys who helped him when he got started are severely disappointed, and to say the least. And we're not going to get any change here. He hasn't even replaced any of the federal prosecutors from the Bush administration, and we've got and they want to throw Don Siegelman back in jail.
That's right.
Yeah, he was in prison for being, I guess his crime was being a Democrat and governor of Alabama at the same time.
That's right.
So, I don't know. I just get a kick out of catching you. I wish Chicago Progressive Talk Radio would carry your show. I got to stream you on a computer, but...
Is there any progressive talk station in Chicago?
Sort of, yeah. We've got the WCPT, Chicago Progressive Talk.
Yeah, but they turn off their AM signal, I think, at sundown and switch over to FM. We begged them to put us on, and they just flat refuse.
Yeah, well, this radio in general in Chicago is pretty pathetic. We don't get a lot of good stuff here, but Kathy Smith did give a phenomenal speech filling in for another Military Family Speak Out member who couldn't make it, going under some more chemotherapy, over at the U.S. Labor Against War conference here in Chicago last month, and she had him in tears. It's just, you know, some of these, I have met and had the privilege of being associated with and dealing with some of the most phenomenal, wonderful people under the most unnecessary, ridiculous, tragic circumstances.
I hear that, yeah.
And people just got to understand that a lot of these reports and all about Cindy and some of these others, it's all garbage. And your cat, he talked about watching Fox in the morning. My cat, he put that on the other morning just to give me when I was coming back in the bed. Oh, I can't take that.
That'll get you up. Lobo, I got a boogie. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Don't let so much time go by before you check in again, okay?
Yes, sir. Well, stay strong, keep smiling, and keep it lit, brother.
All right, man. Take it easy. Take it easy, Lobo. One of the Chicago boys. That's who that was. If I remember right, I know he's a veteran, but I think he's a combat veteran too, who's become all absolutely against, war. We'll be back after the break. Don't you dare leave. I'm Mike Malloy. The sale from Saturn is here with the biggest savings ever on every remaining new Saturn. Or 0% financing for qualified buyers, plus bonus cash. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. It's about 25 before the hour. Bob is in Clifton, Tennessee, listening on XM. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Mike. And happy holiday to you and yours.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Listen, I think you might be a little wrong on the death panel.
Oh, yeah?
Well, it seems to me I recall President Obama meeting with the death panel 4 times. Before he sent 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
The Joint Chiefs of Staff, aren't they a death panel?
I think they are.
Yeah, that seems to me to be the case.
Bob, can you talk a little louder?
Yeah, can you not hear me?
It's a little bit difficult. You're coming through kind of low key. I'll tell you what, just scream into the phone.
I love you, Mike. Have a happy.
All right, Bob. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, death panels. Yeah, well, why don't we call death panels death panels? It has nothing to do with sitting down with people and going over end-of-life decisions. Jesus. I mean, Kathy and I did that, about 2 months ago? We went into our lawyer and wrote out all those directives. What happens if I'm incapacitated? What happens, blah, 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 blah? What happens to Molly if both of us, something happens to both of us? Blah, blah, blah. If you are responsible, given the fact that we don't live in a tribal society anymore, we don't have people to take care of us. We don't. You got your family. I've got my family, but I'm talking about the tribal thing. You know, it takes a village, whatever. We don't live there anymore. We haven't lived there for a very long time. So you have to have these directives. You have to have this stuff. And to refer to them as a death panel, because there was money going to be included to cover the cost of sitting down with your doctor and writing this stuff up. Now, the fact is, we didn't sit down with a doctor. We sat down with a lawyer. I mean, it's just madness. But to have that classified by these psychopathic sons of bitches who spend their times praying people dead so they can't vote is beyond obscene. It's beyond insane. It's transdimensional. It's something that there's not a science fiction. Arthur Clarke couldn't write about this stuff and make it comprehensive. It comprehensible. It just couldn't do it. There's not a science fiction writer out there that could take a Tom Coburn or a Sarah Palin or a Michelle Malkin or the Suicider Beck or any of these people and incorporate them into a mad, crazy science fiction story and make it believable. Couldn't be done. And here these people are, they have tremendous influence on dozens and hundreds and thousands of people. Oh my God. Careful, Mike. Don't think about that too much. Joe's in San Diego listening on XM. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Okay. How are you, brother?
Good.
Two lefties were talking today on the radio, on the morning show, about Obama's accomplishments and that he signed the Lilly Ledbetter Act for women's rights. He's a champion of women, Sotomayor and all that, pay raises for women. It's going to take a long time for reversal in the economy, but his idea is to take profits and roll them over into job programs.
Right.
Banks will pay back the money if they don't want regulations to be imposed on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they started paying it back with interest. I don't believe that. You carve your profits off the top, and then you reinvest because, you know, that long-term growth is positive, and he's given tax credits to students to offset the cost of tuition. He's given more benefits to vets through the GI Bill. They want everybody to vote for Democrats. It's our job to vote. Everybody's been silent now since he made his decision. Afghanistan, the critics have been silent. I don't see where that's happened.
Right.
Compared to Bush, he's great. So that's, you know, the usual, you got to vote because he's the lesser of both evils.
Joe, we can. I don't know. It might be us. We can barely hear you, pal.
I'm shouting.
Are you? I don't know. I guess it's us
have
here.
Have you heard what I said?
Yeah, we got what you said. It's just I'm straining to hear you, and I want to make sure that the people listening can hear you too.
The idea is that this left is fractured.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? It's fractured down the middle. We're in trouble. Because the 49% rating, that ain't going to make it into 2012 like that.
No.
You know? And, who's going to vote for him? I mean, he's losing votes.
Mm-hmm.
He's losing his base. That's been told by, over and over again, by Bernie Sanders and Hartman over and over every week, that he's losing. That's what you say, too.
Right. Hey, Joe, listen, I don't know what's going on with the phone call here, but you're fading away. And, I guess I'm going to have to move on. I got most of what you're saying, but it's getting harder and harder and harder to hear your voice. And again, I don't think it's you. I think it might be our equipment. Anyway, thanks, Joe. I appreciate you checking in. Let's try Floyd in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hey, Floyd.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing, buddy?
All right, you're coming through loud and clear.
Great, I was hoping I would. Hey, listen, I heard you talking earlier about the Fox down in Florida. I kind of kept up with that for a while. That was That was a lawsuit against two of their journalists who had done a report on Monsanto Milk Company because the BGH they were using and producing milk was causing leukemia and all kinds of diseases, and Fox wouldn't let them air it. So they went to an independent news agency, let it out, and then Fox sued them. Well, it ended up, the court awarded the journalists $250,000, mm-hmm. and went to the Fifth Circuit, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they reversed it because you were right. They said they were allowed to distort, lie, do whatever they wanted.
Good God.
Absurd.
So where does that leave us when you have a court that rules that it's okay for the only occupation protected or mentioned in the Constitution, and that is the free press, when a court rules that they have a constitutional right to lie, where does that leave us?
I don't know. It leaves me wanting to go to Canada.
Yeah.
By the way, the other night, I was just one other thing I wanted to mention. I was listening to Sheldon Whitehouse during the debate, and I thought I was listening to the Mike Malloy show.
Really?
What he said, he talked right after Baucus. I sent you a link to C-SPAN where you could watch it because it sounded like he picked up the notes right off your desk.
Oh, yeah, I got that. I got that. I haven't looked at it, but...
Listen, Mike, you have got to see that. He's laid out the blueprint of the ideology, the way these paranoid freaks think, to the T.
Yeah?
To the T.
Hmm.
But anyway, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it, and you're doing a great job. Keep it up.
Well, thanks, Floyd. I'm glad you... I'm glad you listen, even though you got to do it online. Thanks, Floyd. I appreciate it. Gulfport, Mississippi. Bad hurricane hit there back in, what was it, 68? Was it Camille? Was that Camille? I was living in Tampa at the time, and a bunch of us went over there to... A friend of ours in Tampa had one of those, rented or had, or I don't know, he got one of those great big old big-ass motor homes. And we went over to help clear debris, and I only was able to stay there about 3 days, but took a Greyhound back. But friends stayed for like a month. Some of the stories that they had to tell about trying to help people. Of course, we have listeners who did the same thing. Sarge, Kate, a whole bunch of folks who tried to make things a little less horrific for folks down in Mississippi after Katrina. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
There's a feeling of Christmas. People passing, meeting smile after smile, and on every street corner you hear
silver bells.
About 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy, economic affairs correspondent is Bruce Enberg, education affairs correspondent Kate Petrini, program's ethics advisors Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, and our engineer and executive producer is Kathy Bay. Once again, join us tomorrow night for the Christmas program that has become so... so much of a favorite for people who listen on a regular basis. Looks like we are going to have a reading from Luke. We're going to have a Nightmare Before Christmas. Molly will be in here for a Night Before Christmas reading. Also, a brand new Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe episode written and produced by Bob Alexander that you're going to love. Back to your calls. Hack is driving near Casper, Wyoming. Hey, Hack.
Hey, how's it going? You know, you really need to have...
Hack, not only were you breaking up, pal, but we lost you there. I'm sorry, Hack. The call was garbled, and then we lost you. That one I don't think was because of our equipment here. I think that one was you hit a bad spot. I got a quote for you. Who sent this to me? I don't know who sent it. I can't make out some of these email addies at all. But it's a quote by Frederick Engels, as in Marx and America, 1871. This is what Engels observed when he traveled here. It says, this is a quote from Engels. Here, the U.S., here there exists no dynasty, no nobility, no standing army beyond the few needed to keep watch on the Indians, no bureaucracy with permanent posts or the right to pensions, and nevertheless we find here two great gangs of political speculators who alternately take possession of the state power and exploit it by the most corrupt means and for the most corrupt ends. And the nation is powerless against these two great cartels of politicians who are ostensibly its servants, but in reality dominate and plunder it. End quote. I wish I could figure out who sent this, but the subject line says two-party dictatorship. That's a very good quote. I'm not familiar with that. I hope it's legit. I have no reason to doubt its legitimacy, but I hope it's legit. The last thing tonight, and I meant to incorporate it into the program earlier, but other stuff came up, is this new Army policy, even though the general who introduced it, Major General Anthony Cucullo III, I saw him on the news programs. He's trying to backpedal on this one, but... A female soldier serving in northern Iraq could face a court-martial and possible jail time if they become pregnant. And male soldiers and civilians employed by the Army who impregnate the women may also be charged with crimes. This was first reported by Stars and Stripes, and it has caused quite a furor with our cheesy, crappy news media. You know, they will jump on a story like this, but not on on the overarching story, is that what the hell are we doing having soldiers anywhere, like northern Iraq, southern Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan? What difference does it make? Women, men? So anyway, while you're over there killing, if you happen to get laid and get pregnant, or happen to get laid and cause a pregnancy, you are in trouble, soldier. You are here to kill, goddammit, not to create. Come on. We want you killing life, not creating life. What the hell is wrong with you? Aye. The president of the National Organization for Women said it is so obviously outrageous, this order. It is not up to the United States military, she says, to determine when and how often women will become pregnant, or determine whether a woman carries a pregnancy to term or not, end quote. Of course, what the general is saying here is if you do get pregnant, you got two choices. Face a court-martial or get an abortion. But none of my soldiers are going to get pregnant or cause a pregnancy. Now, what are they saying to the males, the male soldiers? They're saying, if you dip your wick and happen to get a lady pregnant, soldier, you better take care of the situation or you're going to get busted. Wow. Wow. Now, the order, this order has been in effect since November 4th. And according to the way it's written, the policy is, quote, applicable to all United States military personnel and to all civilians serving with, employed by, or accompanying the military in northern Iraq, and would be, the order will be violated by, quote, becoming pregnant or impregnating a soldier while assigned to the task force MARN, that's the area of operations, resulting in the redeployment of the pregnant soldier, end quote. My goodness. Well, I don't know where to go with this. It's just, I told you it was a bizarre night and a bizarre program. You thought I was kidding? Well, come on over tomorrow night for the Christmas program, all right? I'll see you then. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.